This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Christopher Scott and I'm here with Professor Dr. Monica Chrisman from Geisenheim University. How are you, Monica?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent.
We are in the heat of harvest, but we are doing very well. The harvest is coming out much better than expected, so we are feeling good.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, you're in Geisenheim in Rheingau, which is, I must admit, it's one of my favourite wine-producing regions in Germany. I love the Rieslings there. They're nice and ripe, you know, stone fruit, lovely sort of Rieslings. Mm. Is that what you're harvesting at the moment, or what are you guys doing?
Well, right now we are going to finish the Riesling harvest, probably by the end of the week. And it was a very complicated vintage because we had so much rain in Germany. And maybe you've seen some of the horrible pictures from the Ahr Valley.
Yeah.
And but we also had a lot of rain here. And the quality is coming out much, much better than we expected. So we keep our fingers crossed that fermentation will do the rest. And then we should be fine.
Did you guys get hit by the same frost that took out a lot of Europe as...
No, we were lucky. We had no problems there.
Okay, is that because you're right on the Rhine River, it protected you, or did it just not
reach? Maybe. You know, we have about 36 hectares here, which belong to the university, and about one third of that belongs to the breeding station, and two thirds belong to the Department for Viticulture, where we're doing organic and also conventional grape growing. And it's been very interesting to see this year that in particular organic production was very complicated because they had to go to the vineyards way more often than normal.
Yeah.
And but it's okay.
Yeah, that's the joys of organic, isn't it? It just needs more inputs and more land and more of everything to make organic wine.
And we also have to sell our wines. You know, we have a commercial winery here being part of my institute.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a very good opportunity to get, the message into the community, because you can do 20 presentations and publish something, but when you go out to a wine tasting and bring your own wine and they come and ask you, "Oh, how did you do that?" You win. That makes us partners there. So we are not handing down any information, you know, sitting in the ivory tower. But we are colleagues, and that's very good.
Monica, what we want to talk about today is I want to talk about low-alcohol wines and no-alcohol wines. And in particular, I want to start this session anyway by just trying to understand the processes that you might go through, both in the vineyard but also in the winery in terms of producing low and no-alcohol wines. Being a professor of oenology at Geisenheim, I thought you were the perfect person to discuss it.
I hope so. Actually, in the vineyard, we are not doing anything special for these products so far. We are just, continuing with our normal production of grapes in the vineyard, and then we make a selection later on and decide this is the best product to be used to reduce alcohol. So that actually happens after fermentation. And what we actually see is that the market is sort of splitting, that we see products with no alcohol, which so far have been called alcohol-free, that will change in the near future, that will be then de-alcoholized, going up to 0.5% alcohol, which is always a little bit different compared to regular wine. Mm. I mean, it would be not correct to say you can't identify that. But what I hear also from the people in the restaurant business, that there's a huge demand for that, because now people are walking way more, they are using their bikes, and they don't want to drink any juice because it's too sweet. And for wine, there's alcohol in there when they continue driving in the street or somewhere. So for them, alcohol reduced or alcohol-free wine, that's the perfect match there. And I thought that this is really interesting. And on the other side, we also see that there is a need in the market for wines which have been lowered in alcohol, which are not completely alcohol-free, but where there is a possibility of being somewhere around 5-6%. So far, that was not legal to produce these products yet. So we had actually up to 0.5% was alcohol-free, and then up to 4% was alcohol-reduced. And then there was a gap between 4% and 8.5%.
Yeah.
And then for wine, we are already allowed to reduce 20% of the existing alcohol and still call it wine with no declaration. And now with the new law coming, up to 0.5%, we have de-alcoholized products. The 4% will disappear. And the 20% alcohol reduction is still wine. And when you go beyond the 20%, that will be partially de-alcoholized. So that will be possible in the future to have other products which sensory-wise, taste-wise, might be much, much better.
Okay. Because it is a problem with wine, isn't it? Because if you taste alcohol-free beer, it tastes pretty good. I mean, I've had some very nice alcohol-free beer, and I, in certain circumstances, more than happy to drink it. I have found one alcohol-free wine that I actually liked, and it's a German one.
But here in Rheingau, we have just started a new project where 21 wineries got together, and we all delivered wine, and we made a very nice blend, and this was de-alcoholized. Mm-hmm. And now this wine is going back to the different participants, and we are selling that in the market as de-alcoholized or alcohol-free wine.
Yep.
And so far, I mean, we are just going into the market in 2 weeks, but the people have been quite excited about that. And I don't see that as a replacement for wine, but it's, let's say, an additional possibility. You know, have a little bit of wider spectrum, a wider range of different products.
In terms of the vineyard, there is a couple of things you could potentially do, I suppose, if you were trying to produce a lower alcohol wine as opposed to a de-alkalized wine. There are certain grape varieties that naturally produce lower levels of alcohol, and you could pick the grapes a little bit earlier as well. These aren't things you've considered?
No, because when you pick the grapes earlier, they're much higher in acidity, and then when you take out alcohol, it's really sometimes too acidic. And also you have to have a wine, which means it has to be at a level of 8.5 before you can do an alcohol reduction. And we did a lot of comparisons where we checked harvesting at an earlier stage. So I don't want to say unripe, but not completely ripe yet. And compared that to the same vineyard, or wines coming from the same vineyard, where we did a technical intervention there. And the products which were harvested later had higher sugar and an alcohol concentration, and then were lowered in alcohol, came out always much, much better than the early harvested ones.
Okay, so harvesting early is not the way to do it. I've heard that you can add certain enzymes as well, things like glucooxidides, which help reduce some of the sugars in the wines. I don't think it's always necessarily legal. Have you heard of things like that? Or
there are some trials. We also tried to do that here, but it doesn't really work. The products so far are not very good. They're extremely oxidized. Maybe in the future, you know, we always have to start from scratch. Maybe we'll find a possibility there. But so far, legally, what we can do is we are allowed to filter out sugar.
Oh.
Very easy thing. You have like a double membrane. And so the first one, you have holes in the membrane which have the size of sugar. So sugar and everything that's smaller than sugar can go through. And with that, you go over the second membrane, and there the holes in there are smaller than sugar. So everything goes through except of sugar.
Yep.
And this goes then back to the original blend. And you can do an alcohol reduction by, let's say, 2, maybe 3%, but you can't produce the alkalized wines with that.
I suppose because of EU rules, you've got to hit that magic 8.5%. You said the rules are changing. Will they allow you to produce a wine at 5% per se in the future?
It has not been published yet, but the EU has decided to change the law to really react to the market needs. And so far what they say is that when you do more than a 20% alcohol reduction, it has to be called partially de-alcoholized, and I haven't seen or heard anything of limits there.
Okay, so it could be that you could start off with quite a low alcohol wine.
That's an option. Yeah. So, you know, having products somewhere around 4 or 5, actually, let's say the other way around. A product starts to taste like a wine when you have somewhere around 4% alcohol, mm-hmm. plus minus a little bit. But then it's really getting into the wine range, taste-wise also. So that's why I think that there will be a huge market. And also, you know, the World Health Organization is really pushing for the anti-alcohol campaigns there. That might also help a little bit to have products with a lower alcohol levels than later.
Yeah. Just on that, one of the reasons, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is one of the reasons why you need alcoholic fermentation is because a lot of the flavors that you get in wine are actually bound up with sugar molecules, and the process of fermentation releases those molecules, and that's why fermentation is so important if you want to get the flavors with wine.
Yes, that's true. As long as they are bound to sugar, they are non-aroma active. But you see, even when you have a very young wine, it's still a little bit, I should say, reluctant taste-wise. And then it starts developing aroma, because when you look at the total quantity of aroma in wine, we are talking somewhere around a little bit over 1 gram, 1 to 1.5 grams. And we do have always somewhere around 1 gram of residual sugar left, unfermentable sugar. So this is really enough to bind these components. And then you see the aging of the wine, and then we see how the flavor develops. And it reaches then a certain peak, and from there it's getting older. So this is what we are waiting for. So we need to have the alcoholic fermentation to get these flavors. And but it's not just after the fermentation finishes. You do also need a little bit of time afterwards.
A lot of people talk about fermentation aromas. Sometimes when you first smell a wine after it's been fermented, it does have some different flavors, you might say, maybe 3 months later. Is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about longer aging?
Sometimes people talk about aroma enzymes or aroma yeast, but this is all very much exaggerated. I mean, a yeast cannot produce aroma from water. Yeah. So they need to have some components which they can then transfer into aroma. And here it's really necessary to understand that it's not possible to create additional aroma. So all these yeasts or the aroma enzymes, what they can do, I was talking about, you know, the time of development, and they have a specific enzyme which sort of cuts the sugar from the aroma immediately. So in all of the aroma which would normally slowly develop in there, that's present at one time. And from there, so actually you take that time away, the aging time. So the wine is right at its peak, and from there it can only decrease quality-wise. Mm-hmm. I would never use that for normal wines. I would just use that for wines which we call them asparagus wines, which you need to have ready in May when the asparagus is coming to the market, so that you have a nice product with the asparagus.
How long are you talking about? Because a little bit off topic, but it's quite interesting. How long do you need to give it before it hits its peak aroma, so to speak? And is it variable?
That is very, very hard to say, Chris, because, you know, every wine has a totally different composition, has different pH, different quantities of acidity, different alcohol levels. So but sometimes it can go a little bit quicker, sometimes a little bit shorter. But normally after fermentation, it takes a few weeks or months.
Yeah.
So when the wine is a little bit lighter, maybe having more acidity in there, it can go quicker. But for the very top wines, it takes normally a little bit longer.
It's still.
This is, you know, why some producers are not going to the market after 1 year. They just say, you know, we need a little bit more time, that our wine really has the chance to develop all these aromas. Mm. And again, they are not added. So they are just, you know, naturally available in the product. They're just bound to sugar.
Yeah, for sure. What about the other option that you could do, and particularly if the EU rules change so that you're allowed to produce a wine that's perhaps lower than 8.5%, is perhaps using certain yeast strains that are less efficient so that they don't convert all the sugar to alcohol. Is that a common technique?
I'm not quite sure that I understand what you mean.
Well, some yeasts are very efficient and they'll convert all the sugar into alcohol, and some yeasts are less efficient, so they don't convert all the sugar into alcohol, or they might convert the sugar into some other product.
Well, there are some yeasts out there which have the ability to create more esters, for example, have some different aromas. But again, a yeast is not a good witch and can just, you know, convert water into aroma. So it can only work with that what is available there. But they have different, you know, let's say, abilities. It's like with children. Some of them might be more interested in music, others might be more interested in physics than mathematics. And it's very hard to say at an early stage, you know, what is the right direction?
That's about flavor, but I'm talking about trying to produce lower styles of alcohol. So if you've got a yeast that converts our sugar into esters, that would result in a lower alcohol wine than a yeast that can convert all the sugar into all the alcohol.
Yeah, well, see, in the last 20, 30 years, we've been trying to use yeast or find yeast which have a very high yield in alcohol.
Yeah.
And now we are trying to go the opposite direction again. but, you know, something else needs to be there then when they are not producing alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
What is there that needs to be checked?
What about bacteria strains? Sometimes they can consume.
No, no, no. Unfortunately, not. I mean, we've done some trials here with enzymes and different yeast, but let's say a little bit complicated because they never do what you expect. And some of these yeast, they have extremely high demand in nutrient. So if you don't supply that, if you don't have enough available in the product, then you might end up with stuck fermentations and some a little bit lower alcohol, but also higher sugar concentrations.
Yeah,
that's one of the options there.
Okay, so it sounds like really, if you're trying to make a low alcohol wine or a no alcohol wine, it does look like that what you do in the winery is the most important element. It's less about what's going on in the vineyard and more about what's going on in the winery. Is that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's definitely true. So we need to have a technical intervention there in order to get the alcohol out. And with the new techniques, actually the products have been increased in quality dramatically over the years. So I did my PhD thesis on alcohol-free wines at the time. So I thought this is a sin when I was young. I thought this is never going to come back. But here we are some decades later. But really, the products since then have really, really improved.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that there will be more.
I hope so. I think, Monica, we're going to wrap it up there. And next week, let's talk about the three different methods of removing alcohol from the wine. Is that okay?
Sure.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Monica. And I look forward to talking to you next week.
Okay.